It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, lads and lasses of all ages, welcome to the show. It is Monday, December 15th, 2025. It is the day, it is the time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 363 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I am one of your hosts, Mac, and I am joined by my co-host, pal, friend, and confidant, but we know him as Mr. Nice Guy 425. And for anyone new to the show, we are going to spend the next hour going through news, history, trivia, lawsuits, and everything in between as it relates to our favorite art form, video games. But Mr. Nice Guy, it's been a couple of weeks. How you doing, man?
Dude, I'm good. Took a trip to Seattle last week. It was for work, but as you know, I grew up a little bit outside Seattle, so took the time to see some friends, see some family, grabbed lunch with an old friend, and went and did some laser tag, went to a Japanese arcade, and ate at a nice Brazilian steakhouse. And Mac, we don't have time to talk about all of those things.
Sure.
But all of them were fun.
Oh, I believe it.
You know, it's not even about the activity, it's about the people. Mm-hmm. I'll have to talk next week about the Japanese arcade, because I played some of the coolest games that I have ever played. Rhythm games. I feel like I almost had a seizure. The way that they make games, It's so like bass heavy, but then also visual heavy and twisty and turny and flashing lights. It's just like sensory overload. I almost passed out, but I had a blast doing it, man. It was great.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. I do have to know, how did tactical laser tag in Seattle compare to tactical laser tag in Wisconsin?
That's a good question. And I feel like Wisconsin is, I won't say it's the capital of tactical laser tag, but there's like multiple options that are really, really good. It was fun in Seattle. Second time doing it there, went to Laser X Arena. It's iCombat software, but it's old. So like you don't have to log in, you don't get to track your stats. And there's no red dot sights. So you're aiming with iron sights. So that was challenging. Funny story about it, super fast. I went with my brother, and I like to win, Mac. I'm competitive, right? They're making teams, and they don't have a system to make teams, so they just say, hey, we need 8 on each team. Squad up with some other people. There's this group of guys. They're in their 30s. They didn't look military, but they looked like they knew how to hold a gun, like they knew what they were doing. And then there was another group, Mac. And if I was to describe that other group, I would describe them as the type of people who would listen to Two Nerds in a Pod.
Yes, our people.
Our people.
Did you lead those nerds to victory?
My brother said, let's go on their team. And I said, oh, well, we're going to lose. This is like trying to climb Mount Everest without food. Like, I like a challenge, but this is insurmountable.
You got your butts kicked by the nerds?
No, we were with them.
Oh.
We were with them.
Oh, yes.
And the other dudes just tore us apart. But you know what? Nerds stick together, right? That's the moral. Mac, enough about me, dude. How has your week been?
My week's been pretty good. Just had a few, you know, sort of normal things. Had a few parties, few holiday parties weekend. Yeah. And I'm shaping up for another one this week, so I'm looking forward to that. Also had some good stuff. You know, Nice Guy, I mentioned a bunch about how, like, we're doing a D&D thing for kids at the local library.
Yes.
What's been really fun is not just watching the kids kind of grow, both, like, literally, physically grow. A couple of them, like, had gained some inches over the summer. It was wild. But also the group itself has been expanding. So in a town of like 1,000 people, okay, where the average age is like 70, I think we have essentially managed to get at least a quarter of the children into this group.
Wow.
Or at least, you know, going. So it's one of those things which is very encouraging. There is one other thing I do want to mention, Mr. Nice Guy. And you know me, I'm of a certain opinion that do you really own it if you can't fix it yourself? My phone was giving me some troubles lately.
Uh-oh.
A couple of the ports, like the headphone jack and the USB-C port, really weren't doing that well lately.
Yeah.
And the battery seemed to not be holding a charge. So this afternoon, I replaced all of that. So we will see how it goes over the next couple of weeks. But I'm feeling pretty good about myself, Mr. Nice Guy, for having taken apart my phone, swapped out some pieces that weren't doing so well, put it back together, and had it working again. So
that's awesome. And voided the warranty, but did not have to buy a new phone. So it's worth it.
Hashtag worth it.
Hashtag worth it.
Yeah, but Mr. Nice Guy, that's kind of been my week.
That's awesome, man. Well, on that note, and I want to hear more about these Christmas parties, but maybe later. Well, let me ask you this before we move on.
Yeah.
Was there like a white elephant gift at these Christmas parties, and were there any gaming or nerd-related things given as gifts? I'm just curious about that.
No, none of these ones parties had gifts. However, I know there's one of the Secret Santa things that we're doing coming up this week, which is, you know, one of the things I'm looking forward toward.
Love it, love it, love it. Well, you're a Perler expert, so maybe somebody will find himself with a Perler of a mistletoe.
Maybe so.
Well, hey, Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do best, and we hop right up in that gaming news, my friend. What do you think about that?
Let's do it, Mr. Nice Guy. What is new in Vidya Gaming?
So much, and thank you for tuning in, everybody, to episode, 363, Mac?
Yeah, 363.
Two Nerds in a Pod? Almost to 365. You could listen to us once a week without repeating very, very soon. Mac, in the gaming news space, there's a lot that's happened. Let's start by talking about the Game Awards. I watched a little bit of it live. Mm-hmm. Did you happen to catch any of it or recap? I was texting Spenis throughout the whole show. Or did you just say, you know what, I don't care about that?
No, I did catch some of it. Matter of fact, while I wasn't able to watch it live, I did take a look after the fact. I had printed myself a neat little helpful sheet of everybody who was up for it and made my predictions as to who I thought was going to get in each category. And I was wrong in almost every single category. I did get one or two, right? Which I felt good about, but overwhelmingly, don't bet on me.
Well, this was an interesting year for the Game Awards because in the past, there have been games that dominated. There's been games that got a lot of awards. This year, there was one game that got 9 awards, and that was Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Just going to go through some of, if not all, the awards super quickly that they won this year. And my question for you, Mac, well, first let me go through this. They won Game of the Year, Independent Game, scrolling here, Narrative, Debut Indie Game, Art Direction, Role-Playing Game, Score/Soundtrack.
Oh, don't forget the I believe Jennifer English won voice acting.
Yeah.
For her work in Clair Obscur 33.
Yeah, that's not shown. Yeah, she did.
Technically, that's kind of attached.
Yeah, she definitely did. And so I don't know. This must not have all of them listed here. Point being, won 9 awards, won every category. I believe that they were nominated for. Mac, part of the Game Awards is that it brings more attention to the games industry. And can potentially bring in fans who aren't as hardcore as you or I. One game winning 9 awards. Is this better for the industry in terms of an exposure thing or worse?
Well,
by not spreading the love.
I don't think it's doing a lot of games favors by not spreading the love. However, I think it probably has done quite a bit for convincing people who haven't played Expedition 33 to give it a shot, myself included. Now I kind of want to know what all the hubbub's about, personally.
Well, here's the thing that's good about it, Mac, is that it's available on Game Pass. So because you have a Steam Deck, a PC, you know, you could just buy it on Steam as well. But you could get a subscription for a month and say, you know what, I'm going to breeze through this game. Maybe I'm going to check out The Outer Worlds 2. Maybe I want to play some Call of Duty Black Ops 7.
That sounds like me.
Yeah, exactly, right? My opinion is, and I don't want to like crap on a game for doing well. I have not played that game yet, but I think it's great that it's getting so many awards. I think that in some ways it helps, in some ways it hurts. The way that it helps is that it brings more attention to, I would say, the less niche stuff. Yes, this is a JRPG, but it is also effectively, even though it classified as an indie, I still see this as almost like a AAA title in terms of quality, right? And so for people who have an Xbox or a PlayStation, they say, hey, you know, I'm looking for something to play. I'm mostly into like Madden and Call of Duty and FIFA. But you know what? I want to branch out, and this game is getting a lot of hype, so I'm going to branch out from being the stereotypical bro gamer, and I'm going to give this game that just dominated, that's in all the news stories, a shot. Mm-hmm. Where it hurts the industry is simply in the fact that it means not as many smaller games get exposure. So the fact that this won Game of the Award and Best Indie Game and Debut Indie Game means that there's others that missed out on that potential boost in sales that come from winning something like this, from being able to put on future copies of your game Best Indie Game 2025 Game of the Year Awards, mm-hmm. right? Game Awards.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it hurts. That said, being nominated in itself is an honor. So yeah. All those that did not win were at least nominated.
For sure. And I believe Silksong did at least walk away with one, which was Best Art, I think.
I believe so. Isn't that a shame, though, that such a great game could walk away with just one award after we'd been waiting for it for 7 years?
Yeah, but I mean, hey, they don't ask our opinions when they make these awards. I will say, I don't know if I am quite as chill as you are about the indie game moniker going to Expedition 33.
Tell me more.
I have a more narrow view of what I think classifies as an indie game, usually a very small team. I would say I would put that at less than 10. You know, I might go on a journey with you and go to 20 to 25 if we've got lots of, you know, contracted in work. And I also, under different circumstances, I probably might have said something like, oh, and it's something that hasn't been in development for a decade. However, because of Silksong, the indiest of the indie games, like you said, we've been waiting for Silksong for 7 years. Obviously, I can't hang my hat on short development cycle as necessarily a moniker of indie games. But I know you said that it feels almost more triple A. Do you think it falls into the indie game or falls into the, you know, outside of the indie game category?
I mean, that's a good question, and I feel like it must. You know, simply because it is in that category, right? There was that Dave the Diver controversy a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, the definition of indie game is broadening, right? It clearly, because when I used to think indie, I would think Cave Story. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it has to be a solo dev, but generally like low budget. You think of, I'm trying to think of like the best analogy, like people who are in it for the love of the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's not just one or two things you can say definitively, like has to be below $100,000 budget or has to be made in a short amount of time, like you were saying. But there used to be just like the smell test. Like, does it smell like an indie? Does it look like an indie? Does it taste like an indie? And in those situations, I would say yes for most of these games. For Claire, it just doesn't feel that way. And I can't quite put my finger on it. But I don't care. I won't play semantics. I'm excited that it won. I just think that it'd be cool to see some other people get
it. Yeah. I mean, it is. I think everybody, hang on. I think most people consider this to be a triumph of video game.
Yeah.
This Claire Obscura Expedition 33. And hard to, you know, we're just salty because our personal favorites didn't get there. You know, us and everybody else. And, you know, we should heap the praise on Sandfall for making good games, making good art, reaching so many people, and of course, you know, reaching so many more in the future. Now, I will say one thing that does tickle me in a good way is, as I understand it, a goodly chunk of the Sandfall Interactive people are coming, you know, came out of a larger dev studio, like came out of Ubisoft or something like that. In theory, might have been a game that might have been passed on by a larger corp that now somewhat an indie adjacent studio put together and now has been very popular and won all these awards, which I think is a fun reminder that, you know, everybody gets things wrong sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. Well, let's keep it moving, Mac. And I have one that's going to be right up your alley. This was announced at the Game Awards. Let's just dive in. This is on GameInformer.com. That first news story, by the way, I was just reading off the internet. We did not have a specific source. This one does. It's on GameInformer.com by Eric Von Allen. Here's what Eric writes. Capcom is bringing the Blue Bomber back. Mega Man is back in action with Mega Man Dual Override set to arrive sometime in 2027. Shown at tonight's Game Awards 2025, we got a very brief glimpse of gameplay for Mega Man's new adventure with an orchestral tease of Dr. Wily's theme. The new Mega Man takes a classic approach to the Blue Bomber with a more stylized look. Mac, it says this game is going to come out in 2027 on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch 2, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Mac, did you see the trailer? And is there anything this game can do to re-cement Mega Man as an elite platformer?
Ooh, great question. I did not see this trailer during my watch. However, I did see it later because I was... because Mega Man things just get recommended to me. The algorithm tells them that I want to see more Mega Man, and they're not wrong. I am excited by the news. What could it cement itself as platforming perfection? Yes, I think it could. I don't know how, because the formula is just so excellent. But Mega Man 11 did a really, really good job of doing exactly what it did so very well. So I'm cautiously optimistic, Mr. Nice Guy. I think this could be delightful, especially if they, you know, just stay the course. It'll be great.
So it sounds like you think there's possibility this could be a good game.
Yes, I think it absolutely could. You never know until it's actually out there, unless, of course, Capcom, you want to get together, you know, send me some early builds. I can be bought. My silence can be bought as well, just saying. But yeah, I had a great time of Mega Man 11. And I'd just love to see more of that. And it sounds like with a name like Double Override, or Dual Override, in Mega Man 11 they introduced the dual gear system, and so it sound which was really fun. It sounds like they're probably going to be reproducing some of that mechanics but adding more onto it, which I think could be quite excellent. So yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Nice. Love it. Well, cool.
And thank you, Mr. Nice Guy, for making time for Mega Man for Mega Mac here.
There's always time for Mega Man for Mega Mac, 100%. Want to talk about one more news story if we have time. We have a couple minutes. Let's do it. This is about Marathon. It's the new Bungie game that's going to be coming out, and it was just announced that it will be coming out in March of 2026. This is on GameSpot.com, written by Eddie Mackick. Here's what it says. Bungie's new game, Marathon, will launch in March 2026, priced at $40. The game's release timing and price were two of the biggest unanswered questions, with so many speculating that Marathon would be priced at less than $70. And in the end, they chose the $40 price point, the same as Arc Raiders. Buying Marathon provides full access to the game, along with free updates, including new maps, runner shells, events, and other content. Season 1 will introduce UESC, Marathon's Cryo Archive, Bungie said. They also said that this is not going to be a pay-to-win. It says they stressed that it will not be based on microtransactions. Quote, more importantly, we believe in preserving competitive integrity in Marathon, so survival will never come down to how much money you spend, the developer said. Mac, I'm curious what you think about this approach. Number one, a Bungie game being priced at $40, similar to what the market is doing when we look at games like Helldivers 2, when we look at games like Arc Raiders. It seems like the multiplayer shooter, extraction shooter, is now priced less. Wise, unwise when there's no microtransactions?
Well, I think it's very wise in the sense that, you know, we've talked about it before, Mr. Nice Guy, in order to give something that relies on a player base a chance at actually becoming something that is played, that is great, that is loved, you gotta bring the gamers. And lower barriers to entry, making it affordable is a good way to hopefully get your game in front of more people. But Nice Guy, I hear how you asked that question, and the thought is, I mean, how are they going to recoup the money? I mean, Bungie does have some deep pockets, I suspect. So I think they can afford it, but yeah, I mean, Nice Guy, when, I mean, obviously I know that sadly it's gone the way of all things, but Gotham City Impostors, was that free or did you have to pay for that?
No, it was, that's a great question. It was $15 at launch.
$15. Okay.
Now that was like what, 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And then they had DLC where you could get like some new guns and some new gadgets, and those were like $5 each. And they released like three or four of those, if I remember correctly.
So maybe all in, you were looking at like about $40. It can be done. Can they do it? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess my only thing with this is Bungie, right?
Yeah.
I feel like Bungie has really set the standard for this type of game. Going back to Halo. And so I'm not saying that I wish people would charge more money for games. I'd much rather pay $40. But I think that if anyone is going to stick to their guns and say, no, we're not charging 40, we're charging 45, we're charging 50, I think that it's Bungie. And so it's interesting. Game pricing now, I think, is less about quality and more about, like you said, getting the attention and retaining the attention of the gamers. Because you get a one-time purchase, that's great. But if you, like Bungie, are going to put months and months and years and years and years into keeping this game going, you have to do so in a way that people are going to continue to play it after the next new thing comes out. So good luck, Arc Raiders. Good luck, Marathon. That's our news for the week.
All right. Well, now that we've taken a look at what's going on around us right now, why don't we take a little look into the past with some video game history? Mr. Nice Guy, I have just one person that I want to talk about this December 15th, and that is a fellow by the name of Jerry Lawson, whose name might be familiar. He was born this month in 1940 in Brooklyn, New York, attended college in Queens, New York, and moved out to California in the 1970s to work at a little company called Fairchild Semiconductor, where he became the head of engineering and marketing. And if you've heard his name before, you've probably heard his name in the context of making the early video game cartridges and making removable media possible for home, you know, for home consoles. So I think it's real easy for us as gamers to forget that, like, there was a time when the only video games were hard-coded games from the factory. You know, you think about, in this day and age, you go maybe to an arcade, and there is a cabinet that plays one thing, and that is how home video games were. And Jerry did the work that made cartridges commercially viable, because it's fair to say that Jerry did not invent removable media, right? That was a concept that existed, and even, you know, removable media for a home console was something that somebody had a patent on. But there's a world of difference between having something in a functional, commercially viable state versus having something, you know, that just works on paper. And so when he put out the first cartridges there for the Fairchild Channel F in 1976 with the first video carts, the beginning of great things. We had Atari later on, we had theirs, but there are a whole bunch of other really cool things that I think get overlooked in that, Mr. Nice Guy. If you don't mind me gushing a bit more about this man.
Please do, man. I'm enjoying this.
Dude's got a problem, because when you're making multiple games, it's helpful to have, you know, controls that can be a little bit more robust. So he goes ahead and he makes a 8-input joystick, which was the first 8-directional joystick that anybody had made before. Bam, that's our man Jerry. He's an electronics genius, but I did not realize until I listened to an old interview with him that he is an icon. So, as an electronic device, right, the Fairchild Channel F, as with any electronic device, would have to pass through the FCC.
Sure.
They do these tests where they're like, hey, is it interfering with things? are Mr. Nice Guy's headphones interfering with the microphone on the computer?
Sometimes.
These are kinds of tests that have to be done for your thing to pass quality control at the, you know, with the FCC. So anyway, Jerry is there, and it is taking a while for his thing to get passed. Now, in the interview, he kind of doesn't say exactly why, but you can kind of read between the lines as to why he thinks that his work wasn't getting passed through the FCC. And so he's flying out to DC, and he's like, well, you know what? I'm just going to stay here. So he basically sets up in the lobby with his things, and he's designing new video games on paper, you know, just spelling out the concepts there in the lobby of the FCC until they get their backsides in gear. And then, of course, you know, I think he said it only took a day or two after he started just setting up his own little office there in the lobby of the FCC waiting for them before they were finally like, Mr. Lawson with Fairchild, yeah, we got you your thing. And then he's just like, okay, then I'll go home. I knew he was a genius, but like until hearing that story, I was even more awesome than that. But yeah, I just, and obviously he's no longer with us.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Yeah, some old media exists of him doing things at stuff like, I don't think it was Midwest Gaming Classic, but it was conferences kind of like that where he would go and be the keynote speaker and such. And there is one, he does talk about a networked, fully functional networked downloadable games in 1977 using teleprompters that was in use in California for the Fairchild Channel F. So I don't know. I'll have to do some more research, but he very well may have done the first DLCs back in 1977, which was something that we weren't thinking about actually happening. That digital delivery for downloadable content wasn't something that we previously thought happened until, like, say, what was it, the Sega Channel with the Sega Master System. So this would definitely predate it for a while. Either way, that's just some nerdy history stuff for me to geek out about. But mad respect to the man, the myth, the legend, Jerry Lawson.
Love it, love it, love it. So, Mac, thank you for that.
Of course.
Now it is time for our next segment called Our Topic of the Week, a segment where we discuss something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. And Mac, this, we're going to talk about Arc Raiders a little bit more.
Oh,
because
okay.
It's still... And by the way, it did win Best Multiplayer Game at the Game Awards. Mm-hmm. So shout out to Arc Raiders. I really have enjoyed this game. This article is from PC Gamer by Morgan Park. Here is what it says. Last week, as the industry converged downtown Los Angeles for the Game Awards, we sat down with Arc Raiders Arc Director Robert Samerlein for a debrief on the launch of one of the year's most popular shooters. Here is what they discussed. It says, we asked Samerlein if there's any truth to the theories that Embark matches players partially based on their niceness. In the example our interviewer gave, it would make sense for Embark to match players who clearly preferred pacifist runs with like-minded raiders, especially in solo queue. Mac, I know you don't do multiplayer a lot. Solo queue means when you're not squadding up with other people. Solo queue. Yeah, solo, okay. Solo queue. Yep.
Thank you for dumbing that down for me. I appreciate it.
No worries. You're good, brother. Samerlein was cagey about the details, but did confirm that player behavior is a factor in matchmaking. Samerlein says, quote, without going into excruciating detail, it is quite complex. We do analyze behavior and match accordingly. PC Gamer says, but you can't say any more? He says no and laughs. So, Mac, here's my question for you, because Arc Raiders is a game that's partially based on teamwork. Mm-hmm. It's a game that's based on getting loot and extracting. It's a game that's based on interacting with the world and shooting the different arcs, the enemies that exist in the world, and that are very, very intelligent AI. But also there's an element of surprise because you never know if another real player that you run into is going to kill you, if they're going to be nice or if they're not. You can certainly talk, but ultimately you never know. What do you think about the idea of matchmaking in terms of player behavior as opposed to skill?
Well,
in a game like this,
just speaking from my experience as somebody who doesn't play a lot of competitive games, I love that as a concept.
Okay.
I absolutely love the idea that maybe I might get somebody who doesn't want to shoot me if that's the way that I play. I think that's great. I mean, it wouldn't naturally exclusively pitch you for just that, so you still maintain some of the likelihood, but also, you know, you've got higher chances of, it kind of feels like karma in a way, you know what I mean?
I get what you're saying, and here's why I don't like it.
Okay.
As I was reading about Marathon, the Bungie mm-hmm. game that's coming out, one of the things that they said in their video that Bungie said is that they took the feedback from the beta loud and clear, that players felt like there wasn't an underlying fear being in the world. And I feel like that underlying fear in Arc Raiders is that you never really know who you can trust.
Mm.
And I think about some of the best media that I've consumed in terms of post-apocalyptic type of stuff, mm-hmm. The Walking Dead, even just watched Book of Eli on my flight recently. Like, there's a lot of post-apocalyptic stuff where you don't know who you can trust when you come across people. And I think that that adds to the grittiness of it. It adds to the excitement when you do meet someone cool and you appreciate it more. So the idea for me in Arc Raiders of separating people who are super nice in terms of not killing fellow raiders and putting them all in one room and then taking the people who all want to go kill each other all the time in another room is crazy. I strongly disagree with it in this type of game. I think that there's a level of risk and a level of skill that comes with putting those types of people together.
I can definitely see what you're saying, Mr. Nice Guy, but have you considered not being a sociopath and instead deciding to engage in good faith with your fellow human beings and just tra-la-la around and not shoot each other?
Well, wait, maybe you don't understand how I play.
You wouldn't shoot me if we were squatted up, would you?
I haven't said what type of playstyle I am, though.
Oh, okay. See, I just assumed that you were bloodthirsty.
No, a lot of time, dude. So the great thing about Arc Raiders, and maybe I should have told you this up front, is that there's proximity chat, which I guess you could turn off. You could mute your mic, right?
Sure, but why would you?
Right. Why would you in a game like this? Exactly. Unless you're like having some really, really valuable loot and you're scared they're going to take it.
Well, anytime you're in a high, like, there have been some games that have done a good job of like doing non-voice chat ways of working cooperatively. I think Portal 2 does a great job of giving you tools. But at the end of the day, you know, if you're trying to, in theory, work, air quotes, with somebody, then being able to do voice chat, I mean, I would never turn it off in an ostensibly cooperative setting.
Yeah, so I dislike the idea of separating these two types of players.
Sure.
For a lot of reasons. And I think I made my stance clear. I'll end on this, and then, Mac, I'd love to hear the last word if you have anything else you want to add. The days of, like, internet trolling, at least in my vision, as a dude who's now in his early 40s, are not really happening as much as they were 10 or 15 years ago. So I'm sure there are still people out there who make videos of trolling and team killing and all that. And back then, I think it would have been great for people to have separate lobbies. Nowadays, I feel like, I just don't feel like it's as relevant.
Mm.
And I would hate to see this more widely adopted across other titles. Let everyone play together. There will be some frustrating moments when you lose your loot. But also there will be some really triumphant moments when you meet really cool people or when you kill the person trying to take your loot and it forces you to be better, right? I guess I'll do a quick, super quick analogy.
Yeah.
I used to love playing basketball. I don't really play as much as I used to. I remember I was like probably 10 or 11 and I was at my local gym and my mom was like walking around the laps or something and I was there hanging out and there was this group of guys and they said, hey, do you want to play? And these kids were much older than me and I said, sure. And my mom was watching this happen and she was scared. She was like, I don't know, like if he's old enough to be playing with them. And then she said, you know what? You only get better if you play with people who are better than you
mm-hmm.
and who play differently than you. And so I think that applies here. Having everyone be in the same room, different play styles, different objectives, good thing.
Yes, there are valuable lessons to be learned by losing all your loot, I suppose.
100%.
You know, I think I could hardly put it you know, I could really hardly add much more meaningful beyond that, Mr. Nice Guy. I've not played Ark Raiders, I haven't experienced, but I have heard you say a thing or two about Ark Raiders. And what I have heard has been stories about people working together and people saying, you know, don't shoot, and then people not shooting. And that has seemed to be one of the things that people really like about Ark Raiders. I'm just glad that there are some people who are finding other similarly like-minded people, even if it is algorithmically that's putting them in the same room. That's where I'm going. But then again, I'm not a competitive, I'm a cooperative player. So, you know, different strokes.
I get it. Well, that's been our topic of the week.
All right. Well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. We call this Kicker Kickstart. Mr. Nice Guy, I've already posted a link in the chat for people who are interested in taking a look. What we are dealing with today is a game called Massbound. Solo dev putting this together. It's very straightforward Kickstarter. A low goal of only about $1,300, which is 1,122 euros, and some simple levels of backering at, at $5, 4 euros if you want a copy of the game, and $9, 7 euros if you also want the, soundtrack to the game and early access. Normally in Kickstarter, we'll see, you know, a Kickstarter that has like 5, 6, 7 different levels.
Sure.
This one all just like, just really a couple of levels. But let's talk about the game itself. So in it, there is a vibe, very similar, very minimal, similar to kind of Thomas Was Alone.
Yes.
You're platforming. The added thing here is that you have a certain amount of liquid as part of your square, and as you move, you're going to be leaving some of that behind you, which decreases the level of, you know, your liquid that's cohesive. If you go back over the droplets that you've left behind, it will reincorporate, but those things quickly, say, evaporate behind you. So you can't go retrace your steps all the way back to where you were in order to recollect all of your pieces. There are some times where, like, you know, there might be like a low area that you have to go underneath, so you could get rid of a bunch of,
sure,
you by platforming around,
sure,
and then sliding underneath. You will take some amount of damage. It'll knock some of your mass off if you hit some of the things like the mean pointy red triangles that come flying around. It is pretty simple, but also very interesting, the added bit of the conservation of resources on it. Again, very simple, very straightforward, but kind of fun, actually. Wish that sort of peeks at it later. Single dev, first Kickstarter project, low price is being asked. And, of course, this is coming out of, I believe, France. And we do have the dev who said that they're looking for something relatively, minimalist, but also they're not looking for very much scope. They've got their stretch goals of what they think they'll be able to add, with eventually maybe an in-game level builder or something like that at, say, 15,000 euros, or 1,500 euros,
sure,
or whatever. But it's mostly meant to be a small experience, pretty well contained, and going for something that is hopefully short but meaningful. And yeah, Mr. Nice Guy, any thoughts as you've been looking at this?
It's interesting, man, and trying to keep emotion out of it. Because, I mean, so full disclosure, mm-hmm, Mac gifted me a copy of Thomas Was Alone earlier this year, I believe. And it's a phenomenal game. And it was one of those games where I was playing it and I just like couldn't put it down. Very, very simplistic, but also complex in terms of, let me say it this way. Simplistic in gameplay, complex in story, and in like underlying messaging, I guess is the best way I could describe it. So when I look at this, I immediately like feel the gaming emotions that I felt playing that. And it automatically like makes me want to like this game and makes me want it to succeed. Additionally, I would normally blast someone for a $1,300 goal because we talk about, can you get it done? Can you pay yourself? You know, can you survive? Mac, when did you say the release date is for this, the projected date?
I did not. Thank you so much, Mr. Nice Guy. The projected release date is February of 2026. See? And I also screwed something up. It's two devs, not a single solo dev. It's a duo that's putting it together.
Yeah, so I mean, this leads me to believe that the game is probably already done. And maybe they legitimately needed a few dollars for licensing and for marketing. So, I mean, I don't really have a lot negative to say about this. I think it looks cool.
Yeah, same. I very much the same way, you know, Thomas Was Alone has such a hold on my heart. And I can't help but feel the heartstrings being plucked at this. Now, it does have a playable demo, Mr. Nice Guy, which is definitely a good sign with this something as far along, or at least as close to the finish line as this purports to be.
Yeah.
It is nice to see what they've got. I have played it. It played in browser, and I don't think it was the best in-browser experience. You know, I think about 7, maybe 8 levels in, it was getting just a little bit wonky. The Unity window was misbehaving, but I think that was more a problem of my browser rather than anything else because I didn't see anybody saying anything.
What browser? Were you using Internet Explorer, Mac? Come on now.
No, I was using Chrome. I was using Chrome, but the problem is, Nice Guy, I always stay several updates behind whenever I can so that I can let you suckers worry about being the alpha testers, and I can get it once we've got all the bugs fixed out.
Ah, okay. I got you.
Point being, though, is that what I did play was encouraging, and for as low of an entry price as it is, you know, as it has, I think it's hard not to feel like even with a risk, $5 is not a big risk to take.
Yeah, you gonna take that risk?
Yes, already have, Mr. Nice Guy.
I might be willing to take that risk too. So not much to say.
Yeah, at the current moment, it still has 21 days left to go. It's only about, I don't know, about 20% of the way to its goal, but that's not a very high bar to clear. So we can get him there. We could get him there.
Yeah. I would say I'd say kickstart this. I think this looks great.
Samesies. Kickstart for me as well. And obviously we wish everybody the best, but especially Massbound looks like it could be a winner.
Mac, thank you for that. It's time for our next segment, a segment we like to call Nerdflex.
Woohoo.
A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host. Sometimes you do, sometimes you do not. And I think we have something to do. Right, Mac?
Yeah, we do. We have a sound test, a new sound test to induct. But before we do that, we've got to send the old one out in style. And what better way than to play it one last time and see if Mr. Nice Guy can guess it, as long as you're up for that, Lom.
I'm up for it. Let's do it. Let's play this bad boy right about now. Okay, it sounds like a puzzle game or like a Zelda type of game. It has like that metallic, not metallic, but like that you just solved something vibe. I'm gonna guess Tunic.
Ooh, a lovely guess. Mr. Nice Guy, you're dangerously close.
Really?
It is a Legend of Zelda game.
It was actually a Zelda game.
Yeah. Now that I've windowed it down, you want to try it again?
Yeah, I feel like it's not one of the more recent ones. So I'm going to go with one that I never played all the way through, which is Twilight Princess.
Oh, right era, but wrong one. It's Skyward Sword.
Yep.
So it's actually the mystery sound from episode 323 that is no longer on the table anymore was from Skyward Sword. It's when you exit the time portal. Yeah, good luck. Now, now that we've sent that one off, we do have a new one for your listening ears. Remember, if you guess it correctly, we will send you a handmade present sent to your door from me. Good luck. You'll need it.
Nice. Well, we're going to get things moving quickly with this test bank.
Yes.
If you are here live and you have a job to do, get a question in the chat. And if you don't want to, that's cool. Just hang out. Max, so here's the first question. Capcom question. Hey, this is fitting since we're talking about Mega Man. In Mega Man 10, what must you do to gain the Mr. Perfect trophy slash achievement? In Mega Man 10, what must you do to gain the Mr. Perfect trophy slash achievement? I have a guess, but maybe you actually know. What do you think?
I'm having trouble remembering, but I think it was either not miss a shot or not take damage. It might have been both.
So it's not as simple as collect all the other achievements.
I believe you could get Mr. Perfect in any given level. So yeah, so I think, but you know, my memory could be wrong, but that's just where it is. It's been a while since I played Mega Man 10.
Okay.
For achievements, at least.
I'm going to still go with collect all the other achievements. So I'm going to go collect all achievements. You're going to go without missing and take no damage in a level?
Yeah, yeah. It's either those combined or it's one of those individually. I couldn't be more.
This is how Mac cheats. He comes up with multiple options. So
it's true.
Answers are locked in. Let's see what it says. Dude, it's clear the game without taking any damage.
Oh.
Clear the whole game.
Oh, this is for the game. Okay. Yep. No damage. Dang it.
All good.
I like that I was in the right neighborhood, but I don't think I can count that one a win.
Sega game. Sega. Which Dreamcast fighting game is the highest rated game in the console's history? What's the game that had Link as like a DLC character?
Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh. What is that game called?
I'm really struggling, dude. It's definitely not Virtua Fighter.
Oh, Soul...
Soul Calibur?
Soul Calibur, yeah. But there's multiples. I'm pretty sure it's going to be the first one.
I don't think it's the first one. But I definitely think you're right. It's probably a Soul Calibur.
I'm going to go with Soul Calibur. I think it's the first one. Because I don't even know if there were multiple on Dreamcast. I have a Dreamcast somewhere, but I don't know what games I had for it.
I'm going to say Soul Calibur 3.
Okay, final answer. Let's see what we got. It actually is Soul Calibur the first.
Oh, dude, congrats, man.
Dude, I never should have
doubted you.
Well, I know so little about the Dreamcast.
Hey, you know it when it counts.
I'll take it. This random button keeps giving us Sega questions. What does VMU stand for? Virtual something?
Virtual Memory Unit.
Okay, easy enough. Boom. Mac was right. He said it with such confidence.
You set it up, and I alley-ooped that thing.
You caught it.
Through the uprights for the field goal.
Mac with for a minute, I was going to congratulate you on the sports now.
Oh,
it
dang.
Was a D-Wade to LeBron moment, alley and oop, but we'll move on. That has been our Nerdflex for the week.
All right. Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
You know, I'm not a lawyer, but... You know, sometimes the law does impact us, and maybe we can suss something out. Nice guy, I've got a little interesting thing. It's a thing called I Am 8-Bit V Skybound.
Ooh, tell me more.
A suit that's just recently started. I had heard vaguely that this was going on, but it was being done in, like, California District Court or whatever. And a lot of time, I focus a lot on, like, the federal lawsuits, and one reason being is that those things, it's usually pretty easy to get a copy of the complaint.
Sure.
Because things like Court Listener is a site that, like, you can pay to get the, like, the court transcripts or the documents or whatever. And if you're also logged into Court Listener, you can automatically upload them on there for everybody to have. So it's got like this whole network of people who are contributing documents that more or less should be accessible for these federal courts. But there's not really the same sort of thing for state courts. So a lot of times when I want to do something like talk about, oh, what is Billy Mitchell suing somebody for? I've got to shell out of my own pocket to buy access to the complaints.
Okay, I got to know, how much does that cost?
It depends, my dude. Like this one for I Am 8-Bit V Skybound. Hang on, let me see if I've got the page number. It's something like 60 pages long. It cost me darn near $20 from the state of California to get just a PDF, which is frustrating.
It is frustrating.
MVPs out there are the people who are buying stuff in federal courts and uploading them to Court Listener so that we can all see. You guys are great, and shame on the other courts for making their stuff hard to find. Okay, with the preamble out of the way, let's actually get to the meat of the thing. I Am 8-Bit, they say that Skybound has not only cheated them out of a whole bunch of money that they're owed, but also stole a whole bunch of things that they put together. Now, all we have so far is just the complaint, but here's what I Am 8-Bit says happened. They are, of course, they make merch. I Am 8-Bit makes merch and marketing stuff and things like that.
Sure.
Skybound is a distributor for Vigigames. And back in 2021, these two decided that they made an agreement that they were going to split the profits from games that they both jointly worked on. So, like, a game might have the merchandising through I Am 8-Bit and the distribution through Skybound. And if that was the case, then what they would do is they would both monthly report, oh, this is how many copies of games we've sold from Skybound. They'd throw that out there. And I Am 8-Bit would be like, oh, and here's all the physical merch that we've sold. And then they had like a profit split between the two of them so that they would just, you know, they'd be sharing the stuff. So that's how it was supposed to work. Now, that active partnership went for about 2 years and, ended in late 2023 and for the future titles, but they agreed that all the old stuff, so like previous games where they had made that, that's still going, you know, that's still happening. So a 2022 game that is under this profit splitting would still be happening. While that contract was going on, a cool title was released called Stray, where I Am 8-Bit did a bunch of the marketing work as well as physical merch stuff. Now, Mr. Nice Guy, have you played Stray? I feel like you have.
Oh, I sure have. And it was, if I remember correctly, I believe it was in my top five in the year that I played it when we did our Game of the Year awards. Super dope game about a cat.
Yeah.
Exploring the world. Great game.
Interestingly, I Am 8-Bit, started working with the people for Stray to do, some marketing as well as some other stuff completely independently. They engaged them entirely on their own. Skybound winds up being involved when Stray gets launched on the Switch in late 2024.
Okay.
And wouldn't you know it, they are using all of I Am 8-Bit's designs that they put together for merch and for marketing stuff that was done as a part of the other things when it launches on Switch.
Interesting.
That's 2024, and I Am 8-Bit's not exactly thrilled about that. But in 2025, apparently someone at 8-Bit notices that the numbers just aren't looking right. And so they claim, and of course this is all their claims, but they claim that that basically Skybound stonewalled them for something on the order of 7 months when they were like, hey, are you sure these numbers are right? And they're just like, yeah, they're right. You trust us. The check's in the mail. And they're like, hey, guys, no, really, this doesn't look right. We want somebody to audit a thing. Oh, yeah, we'd love to do that, but we're washing our hair and we're all busy on Thursday. And then they're like, no, guys, we really need an auditor. And they're just like, this year's not good for us. Could you do 3 months from never? At least this is the story being told in the filing. So at the end of all of this, what they're saying is they're saying that that Skybound is absolutely cheating them, and this lawsuit is to, number one, force them to really come to the table in good faith, and number two, help make them, I Am 8-Bit, whole, whereas Skybound has stolen their hard work and also been lying on these things. They're like, these chuckleheads aren't lying now. They've probably been taking us for a ride. We need to get this auditing going and figure out just how much money they've kept from us in that, split sales profit agreement that we had dating all the way back to 2021. So very interesting. Interesting if true, but also, I'll keep my eyes on it. But yeah. What tangled webs we weave, eh, Mr. Nice Guy?
Oh, dude, that's a good way of putting it.
Well, yeah, that's what I had for us today.
Love it, love it, love it. Thank you for tuning in, everybody, to episode 363 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. Mac, it's time for us to do one of my favorite parts of the show, which is sip on our waters, because I'm drinking the exact same thing as you.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that ice water. It looks delicious. And talk about the things we've been playing over the past couple weeks and watching across all platforms. Video games, movies, books, whatever we've been doing. Mac, what you been into, man?
Dude, I finally finished my first full playthrough of Mega Man X Dive Offline.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, is it the best Mega Man game in the world? Nah. Is it even in the top? No. But as a game, it does exist. There are some good things about it. There are some things that are a little fiddly about it. But it plays, and I feel like I had an enjoyable time, and it was worth the money that I put down for it. But I think more importantly, for a game that was originally released on mobile devices, and had a bunch of gacha mechanics, you know
sure.
What I mean when I say
gacha.
But Mr. Nice Guy, if you'd be so kind, for those people who don't know, for the people at home, you and I both know, what does gacha mean?
So I would say if you ever heard of like Kaizo Mario or games where you're playing the game and then something surprising happens with the intent of annoying you or surprising you, that to me is a gacha mechanic. And is that your definition, or is yours something different?
Well, I wasn't saying G-O-T-C-H-A. I was saying G-A-C-H-A.
Oh, then I don't know what that is.
Gacha is like a Japanese term for like not quite gambling.
Ah.
So yeah, so it was a mobile game meant for like not quite gambling. You had tons of in-app purchasing things, microtransactions and such, for random draws.
Got it.
On power-ups and things like that.
Got it. Hilarious that I had no idea what you were talking about.
Hey, I don't have any idea what I'm talking about half of the time, and the words are coming out of my mouth, man. So, like, you'll get no judgment from me. So, for a game that was gacha, that was a kind of gambling microtransaction game, for it to be available offline and to be something that's works perfectly fine and, you know, still does a thing without having to be connected to the central servers, it's just something that gives me hope that we can have other games work even after they've run their course. So yeah, it was a good time. But honestly, that's like the only game I've been playing. As for watching, I've been what have I been watching? Random YouTube stuff.
Dude, that's the best, man. The algorithm. It has us entwined in its grasp.
How about you, dude?
Well, Mac, as far as watching and playing, I did go to that Japanese arcade. So I want to mention a couple of the games that I played that I thought were extremely cool.
Yes.
The first one is a game called Starwing Paradox. And this is one of those games that when we were 10, 11, 12, we probably would have never imagined that it could exist. But it's like the epitome of an arcade game in Japanese. You're sitting in a suit, in a big chair. You have to put on a seatbelt or the game will not start. And then you control a mech. And, you know, you go through different tutorials. You're battling other mechs. I believe it actually has an online component if you are connected to the internet. And it was absolutely amazing. There's a second game that I want to give a shout out. And I'm looking at my pictures of it, and it looks like I did not get a good picture of the whole arcade machine, so I'm super frustrated. But it was a dual gun game where you could have one or two players, kind of like House of the Dead, except it was rhythm-based. And so you're shooting different things on the screen to go along with the music. It had Japanese J-pop songs. It had Super Mario. It had Zelda theme. It was very, very cool, and I'm super frustrated that I did not get a whole picture of the cab. So yeah, that's what I've been playing. Reading a really dope book by S.A. Cosby, which is the name of an author, called The King of Ashes, and I am very, very much enjoying it. I heard that his books are like a GTA mission, and they are absolutely like reading a book that is a Grand Theft Auto mission. Very visceral, very well written. Mm-hmm. Loving it. Mac, that's it.
Dude, that's fantastic. And now I want to know what that Japanese rhythm-based dual gun game is.
Oh, I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it, and I'll let y'all know next week.
It's not by chance Music Gun Gun, is it?
I think that might be it.
It might be Music Gun Gun?
I think it might be.
Yeah. Love it. Well, Mr. Nice Guy, I'll take us home. Thank you, everybody, for coming out and being a part of the show. And to everybody who's listening after the fact, we hope you had at least as much fun listening as we had doing this. Remember that you can catch us live at twitch.tv/2nerds in a pod. If you want to catch the live recording of the show, you can throw in your own nerdy trivia when we get to that point and let us know how very wrong we are live and on the air. But until we see you next time, remember to be excellent to each other and keep it nerdy.
Deuces.
Bye.
See ya.